I'm Tom Hall, and this is the Midday News Wrap. From mudslinging to chair flinging, T.J. Smith joins me. On Wednesday, he resigned after serving nearly 4 years as the Baltimore Police Department's chief spokesperson. He cited political turmoil and discord in the department that is still without a permanent commissioner. T.J. Smith on the future of the beleaguered BPD. Polls show Governor Larry Hogan maintaining a comfortable lead over his Democratic challenger, Ben Jealous. Some state Senate races and tight races for Baltimore County Executive and Attorney General give Republicans hope that they can make this blue state a little redder on Election Day. Kamau High features editor at The Sun and WIPR reporter John Lee join us. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews A Comedy of Errors at the Annapolis Shakespeare Company. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us for Midday. Today, it's the Midday News Wrap, and we begin with a newsmaker interview. My guest is T.J. Smith, who served in the Baltimore Police Department for more than 3 years as the director of the Media Relations Section. He joined the department in the summer of 2015 after the city was convulsed by violence following the death of Freddie Gray while in police custody. He was the face of the department during a period that included more than 1,000 homicides and twice as many shootings. One of those victims was his own younger brother, Dion, who was killed in July of last year. In a long and candid message posted on social media Wednesday, Smith expressed his deep-seated and long-standing love for his hometown, and he said that the deep-seated and long-standing problems Baltimore faces cannot be solved by law enforcement alone. On a personal note, I am one of many people in local media who has enjoyed working with T.J. over the last few years. T.J. Smith, welcome to Midday, sir.
Thanks a lot for having me, Tom. I really appreciate it.
So why'd you leave?
It was time. And, you know, I heard the earlier tag. I've seen it out and about. You know, the politics and the mudslinging comment was like, that's like page seven. You know, it's one of many reasons. And that's not certainly the primary reason. But I just felt that it was time. I've had a great run here in Baltimore. I work with some great people. And it's a police department that's going to be in transition soon, and I think that the new police commissioner that will be selected soon should come in with a clean slate, select the people that they want on their team, and build their messaging around their vision for the future. And I just felt it was time. It's been a tough year, and, you know, in a position like mine, I can work with anyone. I've proven that. I've worked with three commissioners here in Baltimore City. I work with four in Anne Arundel County and in top management positions. I worked with four or five county executives in Anne Arundel County directly and two mayors here in Baltimore. So I can work with anyone. I just felt like it was time because you also have to have that energy to put forth to be able to give your very best effort. And I think with the transition that's going to be necessary in Baltimore, that it would only be fair for that person to have a clean slate and move forward.
Will you apply for the job? When the new commissioner is chosen, would you consider coming back and serving this new commissioner, whoever it is?
No, I don't think I will. I think, you know, I would have no problem talking to them, consulting with them, giving my opinion, advice, et cetera. I would have no problem doing that, but I don't think I have any interest in going back to the position because I have no doubt that if I were if I chose to stay, I would have been able to stay. I don't have any doubt about that, but I just felt like it was time to go, and I wanted to go on my own. I didn't need anyone to tell me, hey, your time's up here. I mean, I didn't need to put myself in that situation either, so I wanted to go on my own, and it's something that I had been contemplating for a while, and I truly have a deep commitment for service, and, you know, as I've had nearly 20 years in public service, it's a bittersweet end for me, and it wasn't a bitter end, and that's important to note. I want people to think this was, I stormed out. I think it was shocking because I wasn't out telling everybody I'm quitting, I'm leaving. I wasn't telling everybody. And I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why. And I embargoed my announcement, my leaving announcement with a local news organization because I knew I was going to be going. But the reason it wasn't a big public to do, because if something happened that required my attention, I would have postponed it. I wasn't going to abandon the city. But I knew they also had people in place that were going to be able to pick up and keep moving along. So I wasn't going to abandon things, but at the same time, I had commitments that I wanted to fulfill. And I felt like, okay, good. We're at a good time, and they're about to go through some good transition.
And, of course, the picture that you painted somewhat in your resignation announcement and in a piece that that Kevin Rector wrote in the Baltimore Sun did mention the mudslinging, the sort of a toxic environment. I mean, you didn't describe it with those terms, but that comes on the heels of Colonel Perry Stanfield, who had been recruited by then-Commissioner D'Souza to come out of retirement and rejoin the force. He evidently had a big fight with Interim Commissioner Gary Tuggle's Chief of Staff Jim Gillis. There were chairs thrown around the room, evidently. There is a perception that this department is in crisis.
Well, you know, as I stood before the podium and before the community, I didn't, you know, give the politically correct answer all the time. And I was a straight shooter. And of course we've had our problems. I mean, if I sat here and told you something other than that, that would be disingenuous. It's been, you know, a heck of a year. But it's the workers that keep the place going. I mean, and people have personnel problems. You know, the situation that happened between Colonel Stanfield and Chief Staff Gillis got out there publicly, and it shouldn't have. You know, it's turned into something more than what it actually was. And that's just not fair to either one of those guys. I work with both of them, and I think both are honorable individuals. Jim Gillis is one of my best friends, and he's an honorable individual. And no one deserves to have their name or image tarnished for whatever the reason might be. And yes, as things like this happened again, I was like, hey, I don't want my name to be tarnished because I've worked my butt off to build a reputation that people can trust in large part. And I've based my entire career off of ethics and integrity. And I don't want these things to start becoming more regular in the profession. And I hope they don't get that way. But we're about to go through some transition. So it was a great time to step away.
There have been 7 more officers indicted in the GTTF, the Gun Trace Task Force investigation. Ian Duncan in The Sun yesterday reminded us that as of last week, 20 officers have been suspended. 37 more are under internal investigation. There is a continuing problem of what a lot of folks refer to as the police legitimacy crisis, the trust within particularly communities of color and the police department. We have in the Sean Souter investigation, Detective Souter's death, there seem to be 3 camps in that investigation, an investigation that the commission undertook that said it was likely a suicide. There are people in the community who think it's another police officer who murdered Mr. Souter. And you yourself and your former boss, Kevin Davis, certainly initially right after the Mr. Souter's death occurred, were promoting a theory that there was a perpetrator, not a non-police officer perpetrator. I mean, what are folks to believe? How does this police legitimacy crisis start being addressed?
Well, first, I'll say this. I heard in the news, I'm a civilian private citizen now, and I heard in the news about additional people in the Gun Trace Task Force, and I honestly don't even know much about it. I wasn't aware of it before it had come out. I would argue it's a bad thing image-wise, but it's a good thing that this is the agency saying, here's where we are. We told you guys this investigation wasn't over, and we uncovered additional information or what have you. I don't know any inside information or facts about the scenario, but what it tells me is that this investigation continued on, and they found some obvious wrongdoing on some other people, apparently, and they kept following it. So that's a good thing, and we should be applauding the agency for continuing to root out problematic people when they identify wrongdoing. So I think, as ugly as it is when you see it, it's necessary, because we can't think that some of those problems don't still exist. As for the Sean Suter matter, and first of all, my thoughts and prayers remain with his family and friends. And as I mentioned yesterday, I've had the occasion to speak to Nicole Suter multiple times. And, you know, she's the one, and her family and his kids are the ones going through the most with all of these scenarios and conspiracy theories. I know for a fact, back when this incident occurred, we operated off of the information that was available at the time. And over time, information, of course, changed. Different situations presented themselves. The IRB report presented itself. I interviewed with the IRB multiple times to provide as much information as I possibly could. Now, I was disappointed when the report came out, and I wasn't disappointed because I didn't want them to come to a particular conclusion. I was disappointed that I had a whole lot of questions left based on the conclusion that they came to. And I just didn't think that was fair to the family, to the friends, to the community, that there would be so many holes, so many questions that you can obviously ask, you know, to get to this conclusion when, you know, it just shouldn't be a rush to do anything like that. And, you know, I know they did a hard job. They did a long and thorough job, but there were some obvious gaps. And, you know, just from a personal standpoint, just didn't think that was fair. But it is something beyond just that. That's just the long term effects of some community police relations that have to continue to be addressed as the agency moves forward.
There's also a report that 273 officers took the sergeant's test, and only 32 of them passed. That's one of the lowest pass rates in the last 6 years. It's a pass rate of 11.7%. It's down from 60% a few years ago, 50% 2 years ago. What do you make of that? And when we hear about the understaffing, certainly Commissioner Davis was very out front about needing as many as 500 more police officers. When we hear about the staffing challenges, and we hear people saying it's important to promote from within, what do you make of the fact that so few people are able to pass this exam?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know a whole lot about the situation, you know, and that's something that has to be addressed. You know, having been a person that's taken some of these tests before in the past, you know, I don't know what the test was and why it had results like that. And I would almost say that could be more indicative of the test structure itself as opposed to the people that were taking the actual test. So that
has the test changed
a little bit more scrutiny.
Has it changed from 2 years ago or 4 years ago?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm. How about one of the narratives that's always been attached to the Baltimore Police Department is the way the contract is structured, which is the cause, according to a lot of observers, of the incredibly high overtime charges that the BPD mm-hmm. racks up every year. So right now, as of September, it was $2 million more than the department had projected. Where it's projected now that they're going to spend twice the budget, which is $20 million, $40 million in overtime. Is that a function of the shortfall of person power, or is it a function of the contract? What's your take on that?
Well, in reality, when the budget for overtime was set at $20 million, they knew at that time they were going to exceed it. There was no way it was going to meet the budget. It's just impossible based on what it was last year. But, it's absolutely excessive. But with the structure, and some of us find it a little unheard of to have contractual things like a schedule, you know, but that's the way it was negotiated. On the same token, you know, it's a lot of officers that have complained to me and rightfully so, they came in with a 20-year retirement that was changed to 25. So it's two sides to this. So I'm hopeful that the negotiations ultimately work out in a fair way for all of the officers. And again, this really comes down to the men and women who are on the street wearing blue shirts, blue uniforms, that are going out to calls for service, that are chasing down the guys that are carrying guns. We saw just 2 weeks ago where Officer Lippi was shot center mass, chasing down a guy who had been just gotten out of jail for murder this year. So that's who this affects the most. So I'm hopeful that something changes, because it's not a healthy environment for morale if you're continuously being drafted and working long hours. So the overtime is good when you need it, but when you don't want it and have to continuously do it, that's a problem too.
T.J. Smith resigned on Wednesday as the spokesperson for the Baltimore City Police Department. T.J., thanks for your time today. Thanks for your service in the department, and we will be in touch.
Thank you. All right. Bye.
Quick break. When we come back, John Lee of WIPR and Kamau High of the Baltimore Sun join me as the midday news wrap continues. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
Walking down the avenue.
Walking down the avenue.
A few more streets and we'll be through.
A few more streets and we'll be through.
Fangtown, North and P, Park Heights, RNG, White Lock, Cherry Hill, North of Long and Dolefield, Murphy Homes, EA, Green Mount, Barkley, Walbrook, JCD, Poplar Grove, and Evie, Flag House, LT, 28th, Tavoli, Alameda, Mount Street, Emerson, and